On this Sunday night, 1 week later, as a community comes together tonight in a massive show of solidarity, a new ISIS video praises the Orlando massacre. And we're about to learn what the killer said to negotiators while inside the club. Firefight, intense, record-breaking heat, now making the battle against those western wildfires all the more difficult. Tonight, we're on the front lines. Campus rape verdict. A former Vanderbilt University football player found guilty for encouraging others to assault the victim. New treatment for the first time, an implant can help those fighting addiction to powerful painkillers. And Operation Bicycle, teenagers learning a valuable skill and being rewarded with the ride of their lives. Nightly News begins now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening. It's been 1 week to the day since the nation's deadliest mass shooting in Orlando. And today, ISIS released a propaganda video praising Omar Mateen and featuring people labeled as ISIS fighters from various countries speaking in their native languages. As the investigation continues, the FBI will soon release details of what the shooter said to authorities during the attack. Tonight, thousands are gathering for the largest vigil yet. Our Gabe Gutierrez remains in Orlando. Gabe?
Kate, good evening. The crowd is still streaming in. All this as the FBI digs deeper into the gunman's motive. The propaganda video released today praises Omar Mateen, but does not indicate he had any prior contact with ISIS. In Orlando today.
That is so awesome.
Strength is an art.
The 49 birds, they represent each one that passed away.
Father, we pray for your protection of us.
1 week after the deadliest shooting in U.S. history, at Sunday services, answers are still elusive.
Lift up those dads of those victims, who today will be incredibly heartbroken.
Omar Mateen.
Also today, seeking to capitalize on the nightclub massacre, ISIS released a propaganda video, as it has done following past shootings. The video shows a man speaking English, claiming to be an American. But investigators are still trying to pinpoint the Orlando gunman's exact motive. A senior law enforcement official tells NBC News that so far they've found no manifesto or anything resembling a suicide note. That official says there is some indication on Omar Mateen's electronic devices and internet history that he may have used dating websites, though they have not found dating apps on his cell phone.
Where we are in this investigation is talking to everyone who had any kind of contact with this killer.
On Meet the Press, Attorney General Loretta Lynch announced the FBI would release a partial transcript tomorrow of Mateen's phone calls with hostage negotiators inside the nightclub. But she would not say whether Mateen's wife might face charges.
It's too early to say right now.
Please join us in a moment of silence.
Here in Orlando, from a packed soccer match to a crowded tattoo parlor.
To remember, always remember, and never forget why we're here.
The focus is not on the killer, but those healing.
I can't describe that.
Parents like Bienvenido Aracena, who, on this Father's Day, is enduring his son's funeral.
I prefer die first, you know. I prefer give my life for his life.
Oscar Aracena Montero was just 26. Authorities are preparing for more than 20,000 people at this vigil tonight. The attorney general says she plans to visit Orlando on Tuesday to meet with investigators. Kate?
Gabe Gutierrez in Orlando. Gabe, thank you. There is new political fallout from the Orlando massacre. Donald Trump suggested today that the country should start thinking about profiling Muslims in response to terrorism as the debate over guns heats up in Congress. Kristen Welker is covering it all for us. She has our report.
The politics of terror heating up 1 week after the Orlando attacks, with Donald Trump today calling for profiling Muslims already in the country.
You know, I hate the concept of profiling, but we have to start using common sense and we have to use our heads. We really have to look at profiling.
Hillary Clinton is off the trail today, but has excoriated Trump for his inflammatory comments about Muslims.
This approach isn't just wrong. It is dangerous.
The candidates also sparring on the other issue now central to the terror debate, gun control.
Weapons of war have no place in our streets.
You put me in there, We're going to save that Second Amendment. We're going to save your guns.
After a marathon filibuster by Senate Democrats here on Capitol Hill this past week, the Senate is now poised to vote on four different gun control bills on Monday, including a measure that would prevent those on the terror watch list who are barred from flying from getting guns. Surprisingly, Trump has broken with many in his party to support the so-called no-fly, no-buy legislation.
So we have to make sure that people that are terrorists or have even an inclination toward terrorism cannot buy weapons, guns.
And today, top Republicans signaled they may also be open to compromise.
I agree that somehow, some way, we should be able to make this work.
The powerful National Rifle Association, which has endorsed Trump, again today insisted the answer to stopping terrorism is not new laws.
What we're doing with this debate on the Hill right now, it's like they're trying to stop a freight train with a piece of Kleenex.
And Congress has been here before. In the wake of the Sandy Hook and San Bernardino shootings, similar measures went down in defeat. This time, that could change.
If we have another attack, this keeps this issue of terrorism and guns at the top of the list.
A familiar showdown with the 2016 race looming. Kristen Welker, NBC News, Washington.
In the West tonight, intense heat is complicating the battle against a series of wildfires that have burned up tens of thousands of acres and threaten much more destruction. Steve Patterson reports from the front lines in California.
Today, the blistering heat just as dangerous as the flames.
It's going to be hot today, so it's going to be tough up there.
Crews near Santa Barbara battling the Sherpa fire, urgently trying to contain the threat before nightfall brings those possible strong sundowner winds, now all in the haze of near triple-digit heat.
Is the heat really kind of the biggest danger for today?
The heat is the biggest danger for the crews. The heat is also the biggest danger for the fire because it'll heat those fuels up that are out there and make them ready to burn.
2,000 firefighters are at the Sherpa, some in nearly 80 pounds of gear.
This is probably the hardest work I ever done. It's back-breaking, wears your body down.
Winds have been favorable, allowing the crews to keep the fire around 8,000 acres, but the heat can be stifling.
Yeah.
For Kathy Brown, life is on hold. She had to evacuate more than 50 horses from her ranch that's been in the family for 77 years. Firefighters stopped the flames just a few feet from her home.
It's just so scary, and just seeing the red flames and just the smoke and the ash coming down and knowing that you have no control over it.
In Arizona, record temperatures and low humidity feeding the 12,000-acre cedar fire that started Tuesday and is 40% contained. In New Mexico, two dozen homes destroyed. The Doghead fire that so far torched 17,000 acres is less than 10% contained. This fire season forever altering lives.
The fire is still very active, so it's a tough loss. It is a tough loss to see not just houses burn, but the entire mountain.
The Sherpa fire has been 45% contained for now 24 hours. But in that time, nearly 800 firefighters have been brought in to help in this heat, and we're already in a red flag warning. Kate?
Steve Patterson out in California. Steve, thank you. And this dangerous heat wave is going to be a problem right into the work week. For more on that, we turn to meteorologist Rafael Miranda. Rafael?
That's right, Kate. And unfortunately, now getting into the most dangerous time period for the heat across the Southwest. Over 25 million Americans under heat alerts. Major cities like Los Angeles, Las Vegas, and Phoenix expecting actual air temperatures between 100 and 125 degrees. We've had that high pressure still in control across the Southwest. It's strengthening. In fact, we've broken records today already in places like Phoenix. Tomorrow, we're going to do it again. Look at your Monday high temperatures, 123 in Palm Springs. Those will all be new records. Now, the heat gradually subsides as we head throughout the week in Phoenix, back down to the 110s. That's still about 10 degrees above average. And the fire weather danger continues in California, Kate. Tomorrow, wind gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Red flagged warnings remain in effect, and temperatures will be near 100 degrees, a little bit cooler by the middle of the week. Kate?
Okay, Rafael, I can't believe you're saying down to the 110s.
It's incredible.
A new verdict this weekend in a high-profile case involving the rape of a young woman at Vanderbilt University in Tennessee. And experts say the verdict sends a broader message about preventing campus violence. Morgan Radford has the details tonight.
3 years after the rape of a student at Vanderbilt University.
We, the jury, found the defendant.
One of her attackers, 23-year-old Brandon Vandenberg, has been convicted of her assault.
Guilty of aggravated rape.
It took the jury just over 4 hours to find him guilty of aggravated rape, sexual battery, and unlawful photography. He now faces a prison sentence of 15 to 25 years.
What happened to this victim is horrifying, no matter how many times you say it, no matter how many times you see it.
It happened in 2013 when prosecutors say Vandenberg enlisted the help of three of his football teammates to carry a drunk woman back to his dorm. Prosecutors say he didn't physically rape her, but that he took photos and encouraged the men who did.
This verdict sends a very large message to the college community that even if you don't commit the rape, but you're in that room watching and participating and egging other people on, you could be guilty of a crime as well.
Vanderbilt releasing a statement after Saturday's verdict saying it will work to combat the threat of sexual violence on our campus. This verdict strikes at the heart of a heated debate at colleges and universities all across the country about how sexual assaults are handled and how their assailants are punished. Less than 3 weeks ago, a California judge sentenced 20-year-old Stanford swimmer Brock Turner to 6 months in jail for sexually assaulting an unconscious woman behind a dumpster last year. Students, stars, even the vice president are criticizing the sentence. Now Vandenberg awaits his own sentencing next month.
I was 19 at the time.
His teammate Corey Beatty also found guilty of aggravated rape and sexual battery. The remaining two pleaded not guilty and await trial as campuses across the country grapple with how to protect promising futures from being dashed before they even begin. Morgan Radford, NBC News, New York.
And a rape case in Japan was the focus of a massive anti-American protest today by tens of thousands of people. Many wore black to mourn the alleged rape and killing of a woman by an American contractor in Okinawa. They called for an end to the presence of U.S. military bases on the island. A rare and dangerous mission is underway to rescue a scientist in Antarctica, where it is the middle of winter. A member of the scientific research team is sick and needs to be evacuated. More tonight from Kelly Kobiea.
The bottom of the world, the South Pole, a place so cold, 57 below zero tonight, jet fuel freezes. Flights in and out are nearly impossible. But tonight, a worker at the National Science Foundation's South Pole station is so sick, they've launched a rare rescue mission, so dangerous it's been done only twice in the station's 60-year history. In 2001, a weatherproofed twin-prop plane flew into the dark Antarctic winter to rescue Ron Shemensky, a doctor desperately sick with pancreatitis. As they tried to leave, the wing flaps jammed in the freezing air.
It looked like we were really stuck in. And after we got the flap problem taken care of, we found that we were stuck to the ice.
Two of these specialized planes are now making their way south, from Canada to Colorado, Ecuador, Chile, where they are now, then a base station on the tip of Antarctica. One plane stays behind in case the other gets into trouble, flying another 1,500 miles to the South Pole, touching down in high winds on a sheet of ice. The sun set in March and doesn't rise again until August. But for the next 6 days, the crew will have the light of the moon. All they need now is help from the weather. Kelly Kobiea, NBC News, London.
All the best luck. When Nightly News continues, how a drug implant could be a new tool in the fight against opioid addiction. Also, gay Muslims coming out of the shadows after the Orlando massacre. There's a promising new tool in the fight against this country's growing addiction to powerful opioid drugs. The first implant of a drug to help end the abuse. Our Jacob Rascone has more in the first of a series of stories this week we're calling Hooked, Fighting America's Addiction to Painkillers.
Spending time with Sarah Wilson, it's hard to believe that for 5 years, this mother of four was hooked on painkillers.
I was taking the 10 milligram hydrocodone. About 25 to 30 of them a day.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It started with a prescription to relieve back pain after a car accident and wound up nearly destroying her family. But today, thanks to a medication called buprenorphine, Sarah is opioid free.
I don't think I would be alive if it wasn't for medication. My kids wouldn't have a mom. I think my kids would have said goodbye to me.
Sarah used an oral version of the drug before taking part in a clinical trial for the now-approved implant. The implant is inserted into the arm, releasing a steady dose of medication, making it easier to take consistently, not easy to abuse, and most important for Sarah, out of reach of her children.
My kid's safety is paramount.
We're hoping that this is a new opportunity to treat opioid addiction.
Better access to drugs like buprenorphine is the latest front in the war on the nation's opioid epidemic. The drugs bind with receptors in the brain to block both the high and the craving.
You're not giving another medication for the addiction. You're giving the medication to stabilize the person so that they can work their recovery.
Thousands of healthcare providers will be trained to administer the drug, which will cost around $5,000 for 6 months of treatment. New hope for addicts everywhere.
Good job!
This implant is another option. And for some people, it may be the only option. It may be the only thing that works.
For the Wilsons, a lifeline to recovery.
You don't get to keep the ball.
Jacob Rascone, NBC News, Jacksonville, Florida.
Kick it.
And you can see more of our series this week here on Nightly News. I'll be there and also on MSNBC talking with the U.S. Surgeon General on Wednesday about his aggressive new efforts to change the way doctors prescribe opioids. And when we come back, violence breaks out at a gay pride event showing solidarity with Orlando. 1 week after the Orlando nightclub killings, pride and solidarity shown today in this country and far beyond. But there was violence at a gay pride rally in Istanbul, Turkey, an overwhelmingly Muslim country. Some of the marchers carried banners showing their support for Orlando. The police used tear gas to break up the crowd. Authorities had banned today's march, citing what they called security concerns. The words Muslim and gay are a contradiction in much of the Muslim world, but for some, last week's attack in Orlando is turning out to be a pivotal moment. It has led gay Muslims in this country to increase their visibility. Ronan Farrow has more on that story.
After the mass murder in Orlando, one group is stepping out of the shadows.
Being Muslim, immigrant, and being queer.
A new generation of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender Muslims.
I am an American LGBT Muslim.
Omar Sarwar is a writer and activist.
We are combating both Islamophobia and homophobia.
What in the Orlando tragedy has spurred you and others around you to come forward like this?
We react to people saying, oh, Islam hates gays, and say, wait a minute, we do exist.
He's part of a growing advocacy group, the Muslim Alliance for Sexual and Gender Diversity.
I saw the news, and it was as if two of my worlds collided, being a transgender man. But also being somebody who was very close to my Muslim community.
I immediately went to Facebook and I wrote this post. I said, we're here, we're queer, we're Muslim, we're both without apology or contradiction.
How hard is it growing up with these two identities?
You're constantly pushed to give one of them up.
The world's Muslims overwhelmingly consider homosexuality to be morally wrong, according to a 2013 Pew survey. And most Muslim-majority countries criminalize homosexual activity. In some, it's punishable by death.
When the Quran is read, it has to be read within a broader perspective.
Dai Abdullah may be America's first openly gay imam.
There are verses in there that clearly indicate the sexual diversity of people exist.
After Orlando, a number of Muslim groups echoed that sentiment.
There's now an openness to LGBT Muslims, and we were really not in the spotlight before. We were a hidden group.
A watershed moment for a minority within a minority navigating dueling identities. Ronan Farrow, NBC News, New York.
Up next, lessons learned from the spin of a bike wheel. Finally tonight, some teens this summer are getting on-the-job experience and learning some life lessons, too, all thanks to one man's love for bicycles. Miguel Almaguer has our report.
In the small basement workshop with a dirt floor, with every crank of the wrench and spin of the tire, comes the sound of a lesson learned.
Nice job. It only took us three tries. Good perseverance.
This is the humble headquarters of Operation Bicycle.
Be very mindful of your head.
The Sonoma, California nonprofit on a shoestring budget where hands-on skills...
Yeah, there you go.
And life lessons are the driving force behind this small workshop.
And has it taught you about responsibility at all?
Definitely.
The kids who come here, some from low-income families, learn to fix bicycles that need repair. And in return, with enough hours invested, earn a bike of their own for free.
It just feels good to be able to do your passion as your job. It doesn't even feel like a job.
Adrian Palanchar started the program that's helped hundreds of kids in just 4 years.
What gives you the most sense of pride? Is it seeing something like this?
Best part of the day is when one of these guys can help the other one out, and I just sit back and go, yeah. Like, they've learned enough to teach each other.
Whether it's replacing a chain or fixing a flat, what they're really building here is self-esteem. Curtis McIntyre is 14.
I love feeling like I can just work on my bike without having to, like, get all the help.
The work ethic of showing up every day and, you know, accomplishing something. So that's kind of what we're all about.
More than just a workshop, Operation Bicycle is on a mission, empowering the young, one lesson, one ride at a time. Miguel Almaguer, NBC News, Sonoma, California.
Now, that's a great summer job. That is NBC Nightly News for this Sunday night. Father's Day, Lester Holt will be in tomorrow. I'm Kate Snow reporting from New York, and I'll see you this week on MSNBC. For all of us here at NBC News, happy Father's Day, and have a great night.